today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
Let's face it. Anyone listening right now will see an experienced photographer photograph a supermodel and say, well, big deal, I can make that model look incredible.
Right.
So we often get cynical and we get a little bit bitchy about the incredible locations and models and whatever these commercial photographers get. I don't really care what you have in front of you. It does take an experienced professional who knows what they're doing to bring out the best in someone.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast with Raymond Hatfield, the podcast dedicated to interviewing world-class photographers to ask them the questions you want answered. Whether you want to be the world's best wedding photographer, family photographer, pet photographer, or you just want to take better photos of your kids growing up, we will get you to start taking better photos today. Here with you as always, husband, father, home brewer, LA Dodger fan, and award-winning Indianapolis wedding photographer, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back. It is me, Raymond, your host of the Beginner Photography Podcast, as always. And guess what? Once again, we have another information jam-packed interview for you today that I really cannot wait to get into this one. This is one that I've been trying to plan for a long time, and it finally happened, and I was super happy about it. And I know that you guys are going to enjoy it. But first, I want to address the name of the interview, which is Jerry Gionis, today's guest, Wedding Photography Masterclass. And I know that there's a lot of people who do not shoot weddings, and therefore, I don't want this interview to turn you off. There's a lot in this interview specifically about lighting and about posing. The lighting part I'm really excited for because Jerry finds a way to very easily break down a seemingly complex idea about lighting and turn it into a very, very simple, easy to use, actionable tip that you can apply anywhere. And I know that you guys are going to get a ton of great information out of it. So that's all that I wanted to say about the name of the interview. So again, if you shoot landscapes, if you shoot families, if you shoot whatever it is, portraits, dogs, kids, don't leave yet. Don't leave yet because I know that you're going to get great information out of this interview. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. It is time for another iTunes review. So here we go. Okay, I'm really excited about this one. I read this one and it gave me like goosebumps a little bit. Okay, here we go. This one comes from Mac Bandit, which is actually Lewis Stevenson, who's in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group. Total surprise when I logged into iTunes this morning to see this thing. Lewis said, the podcast is filled with good stuff. He has a nice pace. That's me, Raymond. Raymond has a nice pace that is easy for beginners to follow and is consistently and quickly making video tips based on listener questions. A lot of his information is also inspirational and ambition building, which is excellent for us newbies. That's a review of the podcast overall. Starting this year, he's really stepped up the interviews, and they've all been out of the park. I love that baseball reference. If you are getting into photography as a hobby or as a profession, this podcast should be at the top of your listening list. Lewis, man, thank you so much for that five-star review. One thing that I felt like when I first started the podcast, I tried to tailor the podcast to beginners, so therefore I was asking a lot of beginner, quote-unquote beginner questions, like, what gear are you using? And questions that either I didn't think were important to beginners, or questions that I already knew the answers to, but I thought, oh, but if I ask it, then beginners will get information out of it. And suddenly it turned into me being very bored of the podcast. Even though I really wanted to help out other beginners, I felt like I wasn't helping beginners and satisfying myself. I have this great opportunity to talk to some of the world's best photographers, and I wasn't enjoying it. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to ask the questions that I want to know that will also help beginners. And since then, that was about at the beginning of the year, I made that change in the way that I phrase my questions, the way that I ask my questions. I've been enjoying this podcast so much more. And Lewis, oh man, I am ecstatic. I'm so happy that you have noticed the change and that you are enjoying the podcast as well. If you're listening to the podcast and you've gotten any sort of value whatsoever, I cannot tell you how happy, how grateful, how proud I would be if you left us an iTunes review as well, just letting me know how the podcast is going for you, how I've helped you on your journey, how my guests have helped you on your journey. Again, it would mean the world to me. It really would. So again, thank you so much. We are going to get into this interview right now. You guys are going to get a ton out of this this podcast today. It is with Jerry Gionis. And Jerry Gionis he's been in the game for forever. And not only that, he's been at the top of his game forever. As you listen to this interview, you're going to hear his start. However, there are a few audio hiccups in this interview because of Skype or internet connect. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I tried to edit those as well as I could, but there might be a few hiccups that you might notice. So just that is what happened. I still want you to enjoy the podcast, and if you try to look over that, you're going to get a lot of great information out of this. We're going to go ahead and get on into this right now. Get ready. Hold on to your butts with Jerry Gionis. I'm not going to be able to fill all of today's guest's accomplishments into this intro. He is one of the top five wedding photographers in the world. He is a WPPI Grandmaster. He's the inventor of several photography lighting tools. He's a Nikon ambassador. He's an educator, an author, and a philanthropist. And I am incredibly grateful to be talking to Jerry Gionis. Jerry, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you, mate, and thank you for pronouncing my name correctly.
Luckily, unlike a lot of my guests, you are very predominant in the education space. You have a lot of videos on YouTube. It's hard to not know who you are, so I can't imagine getting it wrong. So again, I do want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and by anybody's standards, it's clear that you are a very accomplished photographer. But before we get into that, and I do want to get into that, I want to take a step back and know and find out how you got your start into photography in the first place.
Sure. I was given my first camera at the age of 15, and I quickly became obsessed, like most photographers or most hobbyists when they start. And I was either going to be a singer or a photographer, and I chose photography because it just seemed like that I would be more likely to make money as a photographer than a singer. My brother at the time was a huge enthusiast. He had a dark room. My uncle was into photography as well. So the three of us, we really grew from our love for photography together, and it was fantastic. We would basically photograph anything and everything. I was that guy that everyone got sick of because I was holding a camera at every possible moment, even to the point where I'd go to dinner with family and friends. And while we would order the meal from the restaurant per se, I would grab my friends out and not waste that 10, 15 minutes while that food was getting ready, just so I can actually have a qualified audience and photograph them and then come back in time for the food to be ready and so on. So it became an obsession very quickly. And I basically did that as a hobby from the age of 15 to 20. After high school, I started a four-year course that basically I didn't really appreciate because the course was teaching me things that I would never use in reality. It's almost like kind of like learning algebra, and you're thinking, when am I going to use algebra? and I understand that algebra, beyond what it normally is, it just helps you to problem solve and think laterally and literally and things like that. But so I quit after a year, and because I knew that it just wasn't teaching me what I wanted to know. I wanted to learn the street smart of photography more than book smart, I guess, if for want of a better word or phrasing. So during that time as well, I worked at a few camera shops as well. So just to get my head in the game and make a bit of money. And then once I quit, I also approached a popular studio, a wedding and portrait studio at the time, in Lygon Street, which is basically Melbourne's, in Australia, Melbourne's Italian district.
Okay.
And so we just walked into that studio and said, hey, I've always admired your work in the window. I would love to carry your bags. Would you like a free assistant? And they basically said yes. I carried their bags for about a year and a half with no pay. And then I soon became their principal photographer and did that for 3.5 years. And then I started my own business. So that's the quick That was a quick story.
Yeah, that was that was quite a progression right there. You wanted to get, like you said, that street smarts of photography, and that's why you went to the studio to ask if you could just carry these bags for free for a year and a half, you said?
Yeah, wow. Because basically in that first year, they were, it's almost like they were trying to stretch out the education. Mm-hmm. And I was doing all these different subjects, and I'm like, I didn't even learn how to light someone or pose someone in that first year. And I'm like, I don't know whether I'm getting ahead of myself here, but isn't that a huge part of photography, to actually learn how to engage someone, to light them, to pose them, and cropping and composition? I get that. That was very introspective, but it wasn't really practical. So now, for example, when I do my five-day workshops, which I've been doing now for well over 10 years, often people will say to me, Jerry, I've learned more in 1 week with you than going to 4 years worth of technical college or school or whatever it may be, because I know what, I teach people what they need to know, and I sort of just avoid the crap that you don't need to know.
Right. No, so, That totally makes sense. I kind of want to know, after that year and a half of carrying bags, bringing them to weddings, I want you to tell me about that first time that you shot a wedding as the principal photographer. What was going through your mind? Were you nervous? Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com, and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
Well, I was sort of nervous in one way, but I think that I built the good thing. What I did is I built a muscle memory of what I needed to do. Now, not that I was fantastic straight away. I wasn't. I mean, I was just decent. But the photographer that I work for basically said to me, a shit shot's better than no shot. So just get the damn story. But back then, I photographed with a medium format camera with a Mamiya RB67. So I had 10 shots per roll of film. And if they blinked, it was your fault. So it really disciplined you into, taking your time and really understanding what's most important. And, you would get 200 shots to photograph the whole wedding. So it was a very different time. And obviously things have changed dramatically since then. But I don't, I guess, regret the growing pains that I went through, because it's conditioned me into the photographer that I am today. How did I feel in that first wedding? That I shot, certainly I was nervous, but I knew the shots to take. I knew what I needed to get. Like, there was just these standard shots that you just had to get. Like, for example, after the ceremony is done, I call them my 7 do or die shots. There's a full length of the bride and the groom. There's a close up of the bride and the groom. There's a bride on her own, groom on his own, girls on their own, guys on their own, bridal party. Once I do that, that's like my vegetables. Now I can have fun and do it differently. So I did mainly Italian and Greek weddings. So ethnic weddings, like, they're very family oriented. They just want their traditional photographs, and then I can have fun and do my crazy cropping and my fun lighting and all that kind of stuff. But it's like I always say, do what you have to do what you want to do. Once I do what I had to do, then I can play and I can do what I want.
Wow, that is, so far, we've only been into this for like 10 minutes, and it's just full of like great, like little snippets of information right there. That was perfect for sure. So I remember the first wedding that I went to, and I was just a nervous wreck for sure beforehand. And it's great to hear that that you were also nervous as well, but you had a plan before you showed up, and you knew those shots that you needed to get. And that was that because you followed along the other photographer for so long?
There's no doubt, because I carried those bags for a long time without the pressure of actually photographing. I would pretend the pressure was on me, even though that it was on the main photographer. and I would watch what they would be doing. And then it was just week in, week out. It was this. I mean, look, as many people as like to say that every shot they click is unique, I'm sorry, that's not. A wedding, there is a formula to it. There is shots that you have to take. And certainly if you do 2% of the wedding differently than you've done before, then that's actually a good day for you. So, but for me, it was conditioning. You know, we've all seen the movie Karate Kid, and we were, you know, wax on, wax off. After you do it enough, you, without even thinking, you just know that these are the shots that you have to take.
Yes.
So, although certainly I was nervous for my first wedding, I think relative to these days when I see and witness someone photographing a wedding for the very first time, the problem with the new generation of photographers is that they don't really assist anybody. You know, most people listening to this right now either are hobbyists or just, you know, they love photography. They pick up a camera. Some may be doing it as a hobby for the rest of their lives. Some may want to get into it and do it part-time or eventually full-time. But the problem is that we get into this industry by putting our photographs on social media. We get a few hundred likes. We think we're great. So then a friend gets married. We photograph their wedding and then realize, oh, my God, it's actually so much more difficult than what I thought it would be. And then you start your business in its relative infancy. So then you have no mentor. You have no one to teach you. I could ask as many questions as I wanted, obviously, during the car ride on the way to the next location and say, why did you do that? Why did you do this? I would not only, witness the wedding and by carrying the bags of the photographer, but I would also be responsible for cutting up the proofs and deleting blanks and doing the proof album. So back then, you would get rolls and rolls of negatives, individual physical prints, and then you would have to look at the negative, look at the photograph, chop the ones that don't work and cross them out and then renumber them. And if you were one out, you'd have to start all over again.
Right.
And then hand stick them one by one in a proof album that you would create yourself by extending the screws, putting them through the holes of this pre-made album. So it's a very, very different world right now. But I think that there's certainly a romantic notion attached to the way I grew up in photography as way many did. But apart from that, I think it was a learning curve. I think that what's missing is that too many photographers are intimidated by getting people to assist them, even if it's a free. And arguably that's probably true in one sense, but if we don't teach a next generation of photographers, then we're done. Like any industry, you need the current generation to teach the next generation. Otherwise there'll be something missing. And certainly with social media and everyone who owns a phone has a camera. You know, there's a certain mystery that's gone from what we do. But ultimately, though, it's a very fulfilling job. I've been doing it professionally for 25 years. I love it to death, and you know, it's very fulfilling. I love it
for sure. So you mentioned there the whole education side of photography, educating the new photographers coming in, and you have been teaching photography for more than 10 years now, which is incredible. It's so awesome. What did you see photographers struggling with in the beginning before starting the site? What was the reason for starting the site?
Well, you know, in 2000, I had reinvented my business. So basically what happened was that I worked for 3.5 years for this other photographer, and then I started my own business. Back at that time, we lost our family home to the recession. So my parents were overseas trying to make money. My one brother was married, two brothers were married, and I was pretty much – I had an incredible childhood, but I had a very challenging time from the age of 12 till about 20 where I was practically living alone. And even though that my family were there from time to time, I felt like I was living alone. So I certainly found my independence, but I got to the point where the water got – cut off, the electricity got cut off, the gas got cut off, and eventually the locks were changed in my house. So I got to the point where, you know, I had to break out of my own home, break into my own home to change my clothes, find a place to rent, and then we rescued my parents' belongings and family's belongings. And anyway, what happened at the time, my brothers, after that big recession hit when interest rates were up to 28%, my brothers opened up a charcoal chicken store, charcoal chicken rotisserie in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. And then because we couldn't afford much, I basically saw a big storeroom at the behind the chicken shop that was on a separate road. Like they were, basically the chicken shop was on a corner. Mm-hmm. And the storeroom had a separate entrance. I said, look, if I can actually build a wall in the storeroom, I could not only be close to my brothers, but I could actually build my studio in a place that I could afford, because my rent was like $100 a week, you know, thanks to my brothers. But it was the size of a bedroom. Think of that. Think of my studio as the size of a bedroom. So that's the way I started. And, you know, within 3.5 years, I quickly outgrew that space. And then I got more space from that storeroom. And then I quickly ran out of that space. And then I ended up asking the landlord, the overall landlord who owned the building, I said, you know, it took him a year to convince him to build a second level above the studio. And then it took another year to build. So then at my peak, we were doing 300 weddings a year.
Oh, my goodness.
15 staff members, and we were doing countless weddings and portraits. So I learned my craft by just doing it. And what had happened was, to take you back to the question that you originally asked, is that, you know, this young Greek guy from Melbourne, Australia, built this very one of, if not the largest studio of its kind in Australia, and then people just wanted to know who was this guy. And a lab at the time basically asked me to do a seminar in 2000. And then I had this huge audience. Like, it was like, I'd normally get 30 people. We ended up getting an audience of 200 people, and people wanted to learn what, you know, how I got to where I got to very quickly. And a lot of it's just hard work and hustle and all those kinds of things. But, and then I found I had quite a knack for teaching and really engaging my audience, and then cutting the algebra out of photography and being able to communicate what we need to know and why very quickly. So then I began to teach. And at one point, I sort of became the Robin Hood of photography, because I was literally just answering emails all day, every day, from photographers from all over the world as the internet started to become more prominent, and as emailing and phone and social media started to come up. So, and I realized I couldn't be everywhere at the same time. So I created over 10 years ago now an educational website called, back then, the ICE Society, stands for Inspire, Challenge, Educate. And then every month I would release new content of teaching just what I do. And I found that because many people in the industry today and 10 years ago didn't have the luxury that I had to be able to actually carry bags of an experienced photographer, I thought what the industry needs the most is the ability to virtually assist a professional on just day-to-day jobs. Like, I don't just show the lavish weddings. And to be honest, I don't really do many lavish weddings. I just do your bread and butter, you know, your corporate couples and suburban working class families and so on, among, you know, portraits, fashion and boudoir and so on. And that's what I did. I every single month for, you know, for over 100 months, I released brand new content. And I think that what people have responded to the most with the way I teach is to be able to really recognize that you can make something out of nothing. I mean, we often hear the popularized phrase, which I certainly helped popularize in the industry, of turning the ordinary into the extraordinary. And my assistant back at the time, Sally, actually said to me, Jerry, you really should photograph some behind the scenes of what you do. Show the empty environment and then what you've done with it. So to give, you know, your audience, as in your clients, your photography clients, students who want to learn more about making something out of nothing. Because when, let's face it, anyone listening right now will see an experienced photographer photograph a supermodel and say, well, big deal, I can make that model look incredible.
Right.
So we often get cynical and we get a little bit bitchy about the incredible locations and models and whatever these commercial photographers get. I don't really care what you have in front of you. It does take an experienced professional who knows what they're doing to bring out the best in someone. Mm-hmm. So what I decided to do, I had the foresight, you know, over 10 years ago now, to photograph many of my environments that I was in to really, disprove the notion that, you know, you can only get great shots in a great environment, but, you know, all I need is a pocket of light and my camera and we can play. And that proved to be, one of my signatures over the years, to be able to show the behind the scenes of the environments that I was in, let alone at a wedding, because we've all seen behind the scenes shots from commercial shoots and everything, but a wedding is high pressure and a once only event. And if you don't get it right, it's a problem. But to be able to have photographs of what you were dealt with increases the pressure, obviously, of course, at the wedding. And that's what we did. And just last month, a few months ago, in January, 2018. So for those who are listening this from a long time away from away. Yeah. So January 2018, we totally refreshed and reinvented the website to Jerry Guiona's Photography Training. And it's been amazing. We've just released a brand new website where it's mobile friendly. It's fresh. It's very intuitive. And we're continuing to release content that is very relevant and very much dealing with the street smart of photography, whether it's the art, craft, or business.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, for the past several years, I have paid for an expensive, far too expensive, album design software that I didn't even love because, well, there was no other choice, to be honest. And then one day, I got an email from CloudSpot, which is my client gallery system, announcing that they built an album builder in to their gallery software. What? Now, myself or my clients can build a beautiful album and have it shipped right to them. And on top of all that, this feature is included for free. Now, after building a few albums to test it out, I canceled my expensive dedicated album software membership right away, and I have not looked back. CloudSpot is built by photographers for photographers, and they listen to their customers to improve their service all the time. You can join the CloudSpot family by learning more and signing up over at deliverphotos.com today. You can even build albums with a free account. How awesome is that? So sign up now over at deliverphotos.com. Now, let's go ahead and get on back to today's interview. I've been getting bombarded on Facebook with lots of ads for the new website, and I've taken a look and it looks incredible, and it's definitely something that I'm going to be checking out here in the future. So your team is doing a great job, I'm sure, getting people signed up. You mentioned there all that you need for a great photo is a pocket of light and your camera. And one of the things that I hear most from beginners is that lighting can be difficult, it can be challenging, it can be scary, I guess. And you are arguably a master of lighting for sure. Like I said, you've even invented your own lighting tools. Do you have any tips for those photographers getting started who possibly only have one flash or one reflector to get better light? Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today.
Absolutely. First of all, if you want to understand light, get rid of any modifiers for the moment. Lighting is light. Okay, light is light. If it illuminates, you can use it. And there's a few analogies that I like to give my students into understanding light. Now, first of all, people ask me all the time, Jerry, what does good lighting and good posing mean? Good lighting and good posing basically means that it's flattering and or it helps communicate the message that you're trying to convey to the viewer of the photograph. Light is very descriptive. If you want to make someone look sinister, you can have a light coming from below. Mm-hmm. If you want to illuminate the bride's grandparents, you will flood the light from the front to eliminate that texture. If you want to increase texture, you'll have a light coming from the side because side lighting increases texture, depth, dimension, and form. If you want to bring out cheekbones, the light up above will bring out those cheekbones and give you a beautiful jawline. I could go on and on and on here. Quite simply, what people miss when they start out is they're burying their heads into the technique of it, and they forget to engage their audience. And in this case, if it's people that you're photographing like me, that you need to actually base your lighting on that particular person and ask yourself, what are you trying to say with that lighting? And I often liken lighting to water. So water if, for example, if you have a small hose, and I ask my students this question, if you have a small hose of water and it's got a lot of pressure, as in, you know, you've got a very powerful, you know, flash, for example, and it's got a small opening per se, is that a harsher light or a softer light? And they'll think about light and not quite understand. So, well, if it's a hose, if it's water, would that be a sharper quality of water, or would it be softer on your skin? Well, it'll be sharper. Therefore, that's contrasty. Well, the smaller the light source, then the more contrasty it's going to be. Mm-hmm. If I said, if you had a huge, massive shower head and it was raining down on you, would that be softer to your skin, or would that be harder? Well, that'll be softer. That means more light. Well, so if you want softer light, then the bigger and closer it is to the subject, then the softer it'll be. So if you want to walk into a bedroom and there's blinds being closed and there's a sliver of light, well, that's going to be a sharp quality of light. It's small, it's narrow. Therefore, it's going to be contrasty. If you open up the blinds, then it's going to be softer and flatter. So all these analogies is what I like to do, but it's nothing like showing people. And what I do is that if I'm walking out in location, people think it's actually easy to photograph in overcast lighting. I think it's actually quite the opposite. It's quite people think it's like one big softbox, but there is a direction of light. So people can't distinguish it because the difference between high light and shadow is not so great. So people think that then it's just, it's pretty much the same everywhere. No, no, no. What you should do is stand wherever you're standing and look at your hand. Look for this saturation, the iridescence in your hand, and then do a 360, as in literally pretend like you're on a turntable looking at your hand. At one point, your hand will be more iridescent. And it's then you'll stop and you'll say, okay, great, lighting is pointing me here. Let me actually photograph in this direction. Only when the lighting is not good is when you say to yourself, well, then let me bring in the good light. See, most photographers or budding photographers or enthusiasts or hobbyists, they will choose where they photograph based upon location rather than lighting.
Right, right.
It should be based upon lighting because – now, don't get me wrong, and as I famously say, you know, if I was the Taj Mahal, I'm going to photograph the Taj Mahal even if the lighting is crappy, and I'll make it work. But there may be a better angle, you know what I mean? There may be a better way to do it. And if you don't have the good lighting in that area, then location attracts you, but you have to not avoid the light. You have to go back and find the good light and illuminate that person. And the other thing is that quite simply, lighting is not as difficult as people make it out to be. And you might have said, Jerry, it's easy for you. You've been photographing for 25 years. Well, here's the thing. If all you simply do is find the direction of light and turn the face into the direction of light and stop when the closest eye to the camera, the full eye socket is in light. Why do I say eye socket? Because if, let's say, if there's a direction of light coming, let's say you're standing flat to the camera and the light is on an angle. If you turn the face into the light, obviously, you can't see my gestures here through the podcast because I'm naturally doing these movements on the Skype phone call where you can see me. But, you know, if you turned your face into the light, so usually one eye will already be lit first, right? Because, yes. You know, we've got two eyes. So one eye is already lit. When you turn your face into the light and as soon as that eye socket that's closest to the camera or that becomes close to the camera gets completely illuminated, you stop there. And that way you'll be shooting on the shadow side, which is often referred to as the short side, the narrow side, the sexy side, the shadow side. Pick one, for God's sake. And now they're in light. So if you're shooting on the shadow side, that's going to make them look more three-dimensional, bring out cheekbones and a beautiful quality of light. And 90% of my work is shot on the short side of the face because I like the drama. I like the depth of shadows and I like creating that beautiful form. And if you start looking at light, again, look at your hand and look at the saturation, view it as water, turn your face into the light until that eye socket gets illuminated. If you start with those three or four little tips, your lighting will improve out of sight. And let alone the fact is that once you get over those few hurdles, then you say, what am I trying to say with this light? Mm-hmm. Then you start to become an artist because if you're communicating a message to the viewer of a photograph, then art is really defined as communication. So that the more you communicate, the more artistic it is. Therefore, it's more art.
Right.
Therefore, it's more valuable. Therefore, you can charge more. Therefore, you get more.
That was so much good information. I think that you are like one of the masters of analogies. You've broken it down into a very simple way of just like, hey, just look at the light. Look at the quality of the light. Look at where it's coming from. And put your face towards the light. I love that. That's super simple. And if anybody doesn't understand that, then I don't know what they're doing listening to this podcast right now.
And I guess just a couple other things as well is that when you, if you want to emphasize something, push the body part towards the camera and towards the light. Mm. If you want to de-emphasize something, push it away from the camera and away from the light. In other words, like when I'm doing a full length of a bride or a girl, you just turn her body away from the light until the shadow starts to appear in the middle of the cleavage, in the middle of the dress, and turn her back into it. And you're turning your face back into the light. So most people go to a window, for example, and turn the bride's body towards a window, making it look bigger and broader. But if you turn the body away from the light until that shadow appears in the middle of the body and turn her face back in, now we're looking at this beautiful shape and form. And if you want to, what would you want to emphasize? It could be her bust. You want to make her bust look fuller, then you push it towards the camera and towards the light. What would you want to de-emphasize? It could be her butt. So push it away from the camera and away from the light. So remember those things, and it's just a matter of practice. Repetition, experience, and practice will always be your best teacher.
Wow, we just got lighting and posing tips right there. Two for one. I love that. One of the other things that I hear a lot from beginners is it's hard to find a style. And I think you have your style. It's unique. Anybody can look at a Jerry Guiones photo and know that it is from you. First, could you define what style is? And then for two, do you have any tips on cultivating it?
Yeah, style is a tough one. Here's the thing. If anyone tells you that they're unique and they have not been influenced by anything or anyone, they're lying.
Of course, yeah.
Or they're lying them to themselves. The fact is we are a product of everything that we have seen, every photo on a billboard, on the bus, a movie, magazine. So whether it's consciously or subconsciously, we're all influenced by everything. Now, yes, it's like saying, well, all right, let's all make a lasagna, but what spice do you want to put in yours? Well, it depends on what you prefer. I can't say that it means more of a cinnamon taste and more of a neutral taste, what's better, because art is subjective, so we're all different. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that you should embrace your difference. What some consider a mistake, others will consider as raw emotion. And we often hear emotion beats perfection. Personally, I prefer both. Now, what does that mean? Well, my style, if I had to describe my style, would be glamorous and natural. I want people to look and feel beautiful, but I want it to be effortlessly natural. Like I happen to be at the right place at the right time as this couple had an incredible moment, but it just so happened the lighting was beautiful, location was great, composition, everything was really cool. And at the end of it, so being glamorous and natural is important to me, but it has to have soul. And if soul means that it's not perfect because the hands aren't delicate or whatever, then I'm happy to sacrifice the perfection for that emotion. Mm-hmm. But I do try to get both. In terms of someone trying to find a style, I think most of us in any artistic endeavor, we often will, I guess, copy and imitate a particular style because we gravitate towards it. We, like if you were a ballet dancer, you will learn ballet and dance like the greats. If you were a painter or a budding painter, you would probably photograph like Bob Ross. No, I just learned about him a month ago, actually. I mean, I'm born in Australia, right? I'm raised in Australia. I had no idea who this guy was. And in conversation, we were talking, and then Melissa said, you got to watch this YouTube video. And I was obsessed like a little child.
So great.
As Melissa was also watching. But anyway, it's becoming a running joke in our family now. But yeah, so if you're like a painter, you would probably paint like Bob Ross. You would go to look at Monet or Renoir. And you would want to know what it feels like to take that brush off that palette on your brush and put it on that canvas. Mm-hmm. See, here's the thing. If you've read any kind of business books or any kind of success books or anything self-help books, they'll often tell you to basically a shortcut to success is to imitate or model yourself after someone already successful.
Right.
That's just a given. I think that's a fact in pretty much all genres of anything, really. So some people right now, for example, could be, you know, imitating or emulating someone like me or someone else in the genre that they love. What happens is after a while you gravitate, once you understand what it is that I'm trying to say to the world, then you work out what you want to say. In other words, I believe that your photography is a reflection of who you are. So people ask me, well, Jerry, who the hell are you? Well, I consider myself fun, fashionable and passionate and soulful. And so my work should look fun, fashionable, and passionate and soulful. Mm-hmm. And is there any surprise that since I met my soulmate and I've been married for over 7 years, that maybe 7 years my work became more soulful because I finally found true love. I understand what true love is. I know what that a beautiful relationship looks like and feels like. Then I know what I want to find and what I want to bring out in others. Right. So really, that's what I'm getting at, is that when people are thinking too hard about this style, they're not being themselves. Yes, give yourself permission to imitate, emulate anything that you've seen, because that's the way we all start. It's a shortcut to get quick success. But at one point, you've got to say to yourself, okay, that's okay for Jerry, but what am I feeling? What do I appreciate more? And then some will say, you know what, I really love maybe the refinement in posing that Jerry does, and let me just continue with that strand. Mm-hmm. And then there comes a point where you have to stop thinking, because the more you think, the less you feel. The less you feel, there's less soul. And that's what I'm getting at, is that you might say, well, at what point do you stop overly thinking about copying Jerry or imitating so-and-so or whatever? It's when you've got yourself to a – that you can produce a consistent body of work. So, for example, if it's a wedding photography or wedding photographer, you can go out and shoot a wedding, rain, hail, or shine, and that family would be happy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if I know at that point I'm feeling good and I know I can get this job done, great. All right. Well, what do I want to say about this couple? What is more meaningful to me? And you know what? There's many artists that have somewhat similar philosophies. Doesn't make you a plagiarizer and me an innovator. I was influenced by many people and still am. I'm influenced by everything I see, you know, on social media and on magazines and things like that. So it just depends on what you want to say. And that's just it. You have to communicate. What are you trying to say about that couple, that family, those relationships, and about the world in general? I'm very optimistic. So I'm a helpless romantic, so my work sort of typifies that. Mm-hmm. If I don't have something nice to say, I don't normally say it.
You know? Oh, that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, for sure. It's funny because I've had Taylor Jackson on the podcast before, and I know that he is that you've been with Taylor Jackson before. He has credited you as somebody who's helped him get to where he is in his career, and yet your work looks nothing alike. So I think that it's all about, like you said, finding out who you are, being introspective, and then going off on your own and then just doing that. So, Jerry, I really want to be mindful of your time. So I got one last question for you here.
Sure.
And I'm really excited for this one. And it's all about photography competitions. And okay. you are no stranger to them. I personally, I've never entered one. You are no stranger to photography competitions. And in fact, I went to go count all of the awards that you've won, but I stopped at 100 and I wasn't even like close to halfway through the list. I want to know, what has 19 years of photography competitions taught you about photography?
Wow, that's a big question. Competition for me, maybe let me re-ask your question for my own benefit. So what has competition done for me? It's funny, people, cynical photographers out there or potential photographers or hobbyists will say competitions mean nothing until you win one. And it's not even about winning for me. And certainly I look back at my career and I've been blessed with, you know, lots of major awards and that's all fantastic. But I've got to tell you that what I love about competition is the process. So for me, every single year I reinvent myself and try something new and deliver something to my audience, whether it's, you know, the public, as in people who want my photography, or my students, fellow photographers who want to learn more, or whether they're new and experienced. And I want to actually surprise you with something that you wouldn't expect from me. And often I've used an album competition, for example, to do that. So I've created, I've photographed weddings. I've produced a 3D wedding album. I've produced a Polaroid collage album. I've shot a whole wedding or part of the wedding completely on an iPhone 4 when iPhones were nowhere near as great. I've done albums that emulate a Vogue magazine. I've done vintage wedding albums, completely black and white when that was unheard of years and years ago, when it was before it was reinvented. Full sepia albums, desaturated bronze tone albums, slimline, panoramic calendar style opening albums. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's endless. So for me, I was really, I've always been, and I still am, I'm a creative. I just love, I'm not a creative in like, oh my God, that guy's got a really weird mind and all that kind of stuff. you know what I mean? Like not that sort of, it's hard to explain. You know what I'm getting at, right?
I
like
do, yes.
Someone like Jim Carrey, who's, he's incredibly creative and he's a comic genius. He's now doing painting and whatever. You know, for like I've got a friend called John Michael Cooper, and if you know of him, he was he really was responsible for the Trash the Dress, and you speak to him and he's just this got this weird mind, and it's part of his genius. I consider myself probably just as creative, but I'm a little
comes I don't even out know how to a different way.
Comes out in a different way. Yeah, that's probably the best way I could describe it. So for me, when it comes to competition, I want to channel that creativity and create something that I haven't done before, or whether it's hasn't been done before, hasn't been popularized, hasn't been repopularized, or whether it's just something I want to do for myself. And after this many years of entering and teaching, it's a responsibility. And if I don't know if you know this, but Melissa and I have taken over the WPPI competition, and we've totally reinvented it 5 years ago and reintroduced brand new categories and relevant categories, change a lot of the rules to celebrate different genres and styles of photography. So I'm probably slowing down in entering competition as much as I used to, because now I'm pretty much facilitating that for everybody else, but right. It still doesn't stop me from creating, because the best advice I can give people is this. In terms of competition, focus on the process, not the result. Mm-hmm. So there's some people out there that spend, you know, I want to win a silver award. I want to get over an 80 for this photograph or whatever. And all they're doing is targeting that 80 as the symbol of their success. And then they don't reach it. And then all of a sudden I'm just a shit photographer.
Right.
And I'm like, no, you're not. You're a creative. You know what I mean? You've tried your hardest. You've done really well. And just because five photographers did not look at that photograph and judge it as an 80 and above does not mean that's a bad photograph. In our terms, at WPI's terms, a 75 to 79 is basically meets the requirements consistent with being a professional photographer as standard practice in today's day and age. Mm-hmm. If the bar is being raised in a particular genre, then that means that 80 and above in our terms means it's above average in most areas. That's not an easy feat to do.
Right.
Is it above average in most areas? I'm telling you, there's experienced photographers that we all know and all respect and admire that have been doing it for years, including myself, and I'll shoot a whole season worth of weddings and portraits, and I'm like, I'm struggling to come up with something that I believe is above average in most areas. That is a tough thing to do. All I'm saying is, if for me, for example, if I have a project, I just relish in the ideas and the creating of it and the executing of it, and really just doing an incredible job in that process. If the result is an 80, a 90, winning a trophy, doesn't really matter. The fact is that I've improved my process, my technique, I've expanded my creative palette. Ultimately, the clients are happy and happier. And then it pushes me to the next time. And certainly, don't get me wrong, it's always fun to get a silver or a trophy and whatever. But that's not the actual, that's not really the win. And part of my, the romantic notion attached to what I'm talking about here is quite simply, and the cliche is that if you enter, you're a winner already because you've tried something and you've wore your heart on your sleeve and you're putting it out there. But I've seen people change their whole careers based upon one bit of success. Mm-hmm. That gives them confidence to take that next shoot, and all of a sudden they're a beast. I mean, they're a beast behind the camera because, man, like, it's pretty cool to get to be respected by your peers, and to have someone with a more sophisticated palette to to view your work and say, damn, you know, you did a cool job here. This is pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. Wow. So, geez, that was powerful. I might have to start entering in some competitions all of a sudden. It got my blood going for sure. Jerry, I really want to be mindful of your time. I know that you've given more than you allotted for sure. So lastly, can you let everybody know where they can find you online?
No problem. My Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram handle is at Jerry Gionis. So that's at JerryGionis. If you want to learn more from me and about me, go to gionis.com. So GHIONIS.com. That is where you can join our subscription-based educational platform, Jerry Gionis Photography Training. The cool thing is that you can literally jump in and enjoy 10 years worth of content for $25. We'll get you in for a monthly payment and subscription. If you love what you see, it'll just reoccur naturally. And I've got to tell you that if I started photography 25 years ago with this kind of education for like $240 a year, I would be probably more experienced, more refined, make more money than I am now, because back then it just didn't exist. And the fact is that now we want to open ourselves to a wider audience and really celebrate the fact that we are all here to help each other. And people ask me what my mission in life is. My mission in life is to bring out the best in others. Whether it's photographing someone to make them look and feel beautiful and start believing in themselves and they're walking taller and prouder and they can celebrate their moments with their families and their walls, or whether it's actually helping a photographer get better photographs, be more creative, be more artistic, be better in business, maximize their profits. That's exciting to me. And that's become really our success these days, is that certainly I love photography that I do for myself, but I love the fact that I can help others do the same thing. So thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. And as far as all the guests are concerned listening to this right now, remember that you don't have to be the best. All you have to do is be better than last week.
Now, when I said masterclass, tell me I was wrong. Go ahead. Try to tell me that I was wrong. How did you enjoy that podcast? What did you take away from that interview with Jerry Gionis? Man, I'll tell you what I took away. Jerry's ability to easily and efficiently break down complex ideas, right? Like about lighting. Suddenly, if all you gotta do is just turn the body away from the light, turn the face to the light, and that will make somebody look more attractive, thinner, show off what it is that you're trying to do, communicate the message that you're trying to do with lighting. Everybody can start with that. You don't have to have a million lighting techniques in your bag. Just start off with the one. And that one by Jerry is really great. It's just a very simple mindset change that will get you to using light more effectively. Being able to see that light was such a great takeaway. And I know that you're going to take away so much more than that. I would love to know what the number one thing you took away from this episode was. And I would love for you to share it with me in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, because guess what? That's where all the cool kids hang out. Joining is super easy. All you got to do is go to Facebook, search for Beginner Photography Podcast, and it should show up. You're going to see the main fan page as well as the group, and you will be able to join and interact with the community of other photographers just like you who are on the same path of trying to grow as a photographer. And within that group, you can share what your biggest takeaway was. I would love to hear it. I'm sure Jerry would love to hear it as well. Huge shout out to Jerry and Melissa. Jerry, thank you so much for sharing everything that you did coming on the podcast. Your education, your experience is second to none. And Melissa, you are one of the most helpful people I have ever encountered in my life. And I truly thank you for all of your help in facilitating this episode. So guys, I want you to get out there. I want you to keep shooting. I want you to enjoy life. I want you to photograph the things that mean the most to you. But most importantly, I want you to, on top of having fun, I want you to stay safe. All right? Get out there, keep shooting, and I will see you all next week. Love ya.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. Be sure to join the conversations on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want any links or resources we talked about in today's episode, check out the show notes at beginnerphotographypodcast.com. See you again next week.